on a bonus episode of the 1012 podcast. I've got three great guests, Brian Ralph, Marshall Scott, and Ethan Bach, to help us look at both Big 12 men's basketball job openings at Oklahoma State and West Virginia. What ADs are looking for, NIL situation, names to keep an eye on, and who each of our guests would hire.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the 1012, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah. We are the flagship show, the 1012 Network. Find every show on the network at 1012network.com. And of course, we're partners with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. Thank you for joining us for a bonus pod this week. Yes, it's a three-episode week. I should not have done this. This was a terrible idea. I think my children were finally not running fever, and my brain was like, let's make life hard again. So here I am. But with everything going on, it's March Madness. We had Monday's episode where we filled out the bracket. We're going to have softball on Thursday. And today, we're talking about the coaching searches. Oklahoma State, West Virginia, both hunting for men's basketball coaches. We've got two guests coming up in Marshall Scott of Pistols Firing to talk OSU. We've got Ethan Bach of WV Sports Now to talk West Virginia. And to kick things off, we've got my friend, podcast guest, podcast friend of the pod. What do you want to call him? I don't care. The fact that we haven't had him on until now this season is a disgrace by me. He is our very good friend, Brian Ralph. Brian, welcome back, man.
I appreciate you having me. You've had a lot going on, so we'll excuse it, but it's good to be back.
As a father now, you understand, like, when the kids get sick, your whole life is...
It's absurd. It's absurd.
And kids with mono, let me tell you.
Not great.
When your emotionful, as we call her child, gets monitored, it's volatile. It's not great. Speaking of volatility, we're going to talk coaching searches. West Virginia and Oklahoma State are both open. West Virginia, we've known this was coming for some time. Mm-hmm. OSU, something of a surprise because of the buyout. It's $9-something million to Mike Boynton. To fire him before there was a reduction on April 1st, but you can't wait till April 1st. You can't wait that long. Just your general thoughts on these two openings in the Big 12 right now.
I think the West Virginia opening is a underrated one nationally because of the NIL support that you're going to get at that program and what they have shown they're willing to put in to that program, right? This back before this season went off the rails in late March and April of last year, you know, people were talking about West Virginia as a top 25 team. West Virginia fans had Final Four hopes and aspirations, largely because they were able to go out and get high-end guys in the portal because of the amount of NIL money they were able to pay them, right? And obviously 8,000 things happened since then that caused West Virginia to finish where they did in the Big 12 standings. But those resources are there and that matters, right? West Virginia is a place that has some history of winning. No one's going to confuse them with the blue blood, but you have been able to win at a high level there and make Final Fours. We've seen that through numerous coaches to be able to win at a high level. It's not going to be like the top job of the cycle, but I think it could be in the conversation now that Ohio State is full. Like, I think West Virginia can be in that mix, depending on what you think of the administrative situation at Louisville. We will regress from there. That's a conversation for another day. But the West Virginia opening, I think, is appealing, and we'll have a number of high-quality suitors. The Oklahoma State one, to me, is interesting because that $9 million buyout and the willingness to pay that gives the signal that they are more serious about improving the basketball program. There's been a lot of apathy around the program, both fan apathy and I think administrative apathy too, to where like, oh, we'll hope we just kind of figure this out. And there hasn't been as much passion as we've come to know Oklahoma State basketball to be. I think this is a signal that they're willing to get that back. Now, it is kind of silly to pay that big of a buyout and then skimp on the hire because you want to save money. That kind of goes against the purpose of making that decision. Because if you were going to make the decision and money was an issue, you would have just kept Mike Boynton for another year and made a decision then. So I am anticipating that they are going to offer competitive contracts to some of those higher end coaches. We'll see who all ends up being at the top of their list. I know it's still kind of up in the air right now, but I do think Oklahoma State has a great chance to get a hot name if they're willing to shell out money like they seem to be willing to.
You mentioned NIL. I want to talk about that because two different situations at both schools now. For West Virginia, is there any concern that you're going to see some of that cut back because of the money, that how much of it was tied to Bob Huggins? And with Bob Huggins having the power in that state that he does, obviously not being happy about the fact that he lost his job, and there being people in and around the program who are still supporters of Bob Huggins saying, well, you fired my buddy and you should have given him another chance, a third chance, and so we're going to give you less. Is there concern about that at West Virginia?
There is some, and it'd be foolish to think not, and naive to think that it's not. At the same time, you know, if West Virginia starts winning, those purse strings open again.
Winning cures all in sports.
If you hire a name that wins the press conference, those purse strings open again. Those feelings suddenly don't become as stringent, right? I think it all depends who you hire and the cachet that they bring. But the fact that you know that is there in the right situation shows that you can be successful and that's even available to you, right? Because it's not available at some schools. Michigan might be one of them where it's not available at.
For OSU, obviously, Mike Boynton had mentioned just a few weeks back their struggles with NIL and needing more of it. We can set aside the Oklahoma State's issues with talking about NIL for another day. From the optimistic side as an Oklahoma State fan, you said it seems like if you're willing to pay that much of a buyout, $9+ million, it seems like you're taking this seriously.
Right.
You have to hope that maybe those words actually spurred Oklahoma State alumni and boosters on to say, well, maybe that really is part of the problem. Maybe we really do need to open up the purse strings, both in hiring a coach and not hiring an assistant somewhere. And maybe we do need to fork over some more money. Do we feel like, are we reading too much into the notion of OSU was willing to pay that much? Or will OSU got boosters who were willing to pay that much to figure out how to remove Mike Boynton? Obviously, it'll be stretched out. It's not $9 million up front.
Right.
But to pay that much to fire Mike Boynton and take this seriously, including in the NIL field.
I think so. I also don't know if it's a coincidence, and I don't think it is, that they made this decision the first year after the first wave of new teams in the Big 12 came. Because there is the thought with Texas and Oklahoma leaving that it's like, oh, you know, the conference is changing a little bit. You're bringing in some teams from mid-major conferences, from the American Conference, and that you might be okay. Because a lot of these teams, BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, were projected to finish at the bottom of the conference. They did not. Now, conference is getting even stronger next year, right? Bringing in Arizona, bringing a Colorado team in the mid-tournament. Like, there is some urgency, too, to come along with, you know, we're expanding. We're going to be at 16 teams. We can't be at the bottom of this. They can't be at the bottom of that. They're as apathetic as I think that fan base has become, and you can speak to that better than I can, but reading the tea leaves, it seems like there was a general lack of passion that, again, Oklahoma State fans have in abundance, but when your basketball team is losing as much as they have, it's very easy to look elsewhere. There is a strong desire to not be in that position. And yes, I do think the $9 million buyout signals something. From the NIL perspective, I do not know if it rallied NIL, and maybe the administration said, I know we're kind of short with this, but let's pay some money up front to you and maybe offset getting a better coach that way. Kind of the more old fashioned, we'll overpay for a coach because we lack resources elsewhere type of situation, just modernize with NIL.
Yeah, but something to keep an eye on. Yeah, apathetic. There's no worse of a fan base than an apathetic one. You'd rather have an angry one because they're invested. When they stop talking about your team getting blown out by 20 points, that's when it becomes it's more expensive to keep him than it is to fire him situation. Okay, we're gonna talk transfer portal here in just a second, but I I want to get from you, mm-hmm. if you're the guy in charge of OSU, if you're the guy in charge of West Virginia, who are you hiring?
If I'm in charge of West Virginia, I'm going real hard after Nico Medved. He is somebody who's had the best stretch of seasons Colorado State. Dusty May has been heavily linked to the Louisville job. I'm going to go after him if it seems like he's not going to be the guy at Louisville. FAU has disappointed this season from the lofty expectations, but the fact Florida Atlantic has lofty expectations. Like we've kind of been desensitized to this, right? That no coach in FAU's history since moving to D1 had more than one winning season in their tenure. He's been there 6 years. He has not had a losing season. He's won 60 games combined over the last 2 years. Like he's a damn good coach. That's why these teams are interested in him. If he gets the Louisville job, Nico Medved is my number two. He has some ties to the school through his wife. His coaching comp, like if you were to do like player comps like you do for the NBA draft, very similar to John Beilein. We saw the success Beilein had at West Virginia. I don't think it's that far-fetched to see a roadmap for him being very successful at West Virginia. Colorado State, he's had the most successful tenure in Colorado State history. Colorado State, he succeeded without NIL. I think he'd like to have West Virginia's NIL bag there. From an Oklahoma State standpoint, I think it's a little bit different because I do think you need somebody who has more of a promoter aspect to them, at least originally. You mentioned like you win games, people are going to come. That's first and foremost. No matter how good of a promoter you are, if you lose games, it doesn't matter. I really like Amir Abdul-Rahim from South Florida for Oklahoma State. And I don't have any knowledge of that being ties there. That's where they're looking. But he is somebody who had success at Kennesaw State, goes to South Florida, and immediately takes them to an American Conference championship. And they had not won a conference championship of any kind, if my memory serves. And he goes out and wins the American in their first year there in the toughest league that they've have played in. He's somebody, too, who Kennesaw State and South Florida do not have the best fan bases or basketball support traditionally. He got both of those schools fired up about their basketball program. In South Florida, it was much harder to do, and he got it done in a quick turnaround there. Given his track record, given where it seems like his coaching star is going, I think you have to be early for a program like Oklahoma State if you want to get back to being one of the Big 12 premier programs. And Abdul-Rahim, to me, is the guy who fits that mold the best.
I got to talk about the transfer portal, which opened on Monday. the Monday of the week of the tournament. I don't have the exact number. I saw it. It's a record number of players into the transfer portal on day one on Monday.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of the right way to word this. Who the hell thought, yeah, that's the day to do it. That's the day to open the transfer portal. And I understand the mindset of the majority of Division I and all of college basketball teams are not in a postseason. Or not, let me rephrase it, are not in the NCAA tournament because while I have not done the research, it wouldn't shock me if there are players on teams in NIT who've already entered the transfer portal at all. Mm-hmm. I get all of that. But this is the NCAA tournament time. To open the transfer portal window now seems counterintuitive to one of your most important products that exists in March Madness.
Yes.
You couldn't wait till at least we got past the first week. You couldn't wait till at least we got to the final weekend. I mean, Final Four, there's four teams left. There's four teams. Mm-hmm. And I understand those four teams wouldn't be happy, but at least we'd be through a large portion of the, like, we couldn't have waited two more weeks. We had to do it now. This just seems, I understand with football, you have a lot on the calendar between the school calendar and the bowl season and signing day. There's a lot of, it's very complicated to figure out how to do it with football with the way the calendar lines up. It's not complicated here. It's not complicated here. There's like, it's not.
Yeah.
You wait 2 weeks.
It does seem counterintuitive to have your offseason start as your postseason is starting. Could you imagine like NFL free agency kicking off like on wild card weekend? because that's what's happening here. We talk all the time about transfer portal free agency. It's free agency now, but it's not treated that way. And I don't mean this to come off as anti-transfer portal because I am not.
No, 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 no.
freedom of player movement is a good thing. I do think there has to be some kind of restrictions, and we may end up getting there when athletes become employees at some point in the not too distant future. But again, conversation for another day. It is extremely counterintuitive to have your offseason the same time as your postseason. The coaching carousel is different because the only schools that are involved in that really are schools whose seasons are done and who need to hit the reset button, right? Like, it's not affecting all 362 teams in the country like this is. You brought up football. There is a football transfer window that opens up after spring practice. It's April 15th or 16th, April 30th, right? That's after the Final Four. Let's just have that window through basketball, beat basketball too, throw everybody in there, extend the window a month for basketball and keep it. I think it's only 2 weeks for football, but extend it longer for basketball. Just you already have it set up. Just throw everybody in there at that time. I don't understand why we're not multi-using windows, and every sport has to have a different window. It is okay if there is a couple of weeks where players just have to kind of sit tight. It's okay. It's okay.
The Elite Eight is the 30th and 31st this year. Like, just say we can't have a date. Okay, cool. We don't know when the tournament's gonna be all the time. All right, the portal opens the day after the Elite Eight's over. Done. Yeah. Like I'm sorry to the teams in the Final Four. Like, I think you're probably gonna be okay. But like, what are we? It's so hard to just do the obvious things.
Yeah.
Like, I just, and maybe this was a more complicated conversation when they were having it, but I don't know how no one in the room stood up and just went, y'all, what?
Right.
What are we doing?
It lacks common sense. And the portal itself is a huge, huge thing for college basketball coaches. Yes. I mean, obviously with player movement and the way we've seen some strategies change, but also like the amount of players that come in can make up a third to a half of your roster for pretty much everybody in the country. Like, I think last year we had over 1,700 players enter the portal. Like, you have coaches whose job in the offseason, that first month or two, is to sit there and refresh the portal and see who comes in. And they have a list of names that they like, guys they want to dive into, but they sit there and refresh the portal. And so right now, during NCAA tournament prep, you're having a coach sit there and refresh the portal. It's dumb.
It was Travis Branham. I found the tweet. It was a record 291 players entered the portal on Monday.
And I think the thing is, even if all of those guys like end up at where they likely want to end up and produce at a high level, maybe 10 of them, maybe, or sorry, not 10, maybe 10% of them will like matter on a national scale that in terms of how the college basketball season plays out, right?
Yeah.
From like the health of the sport as a whole, it makes no sense.
None. Brian, awesome as always. I appreciate your time. Do me a favor. You do an incredible job covering college basketball. We just got more people need to know about you. So where can they find the work that you do all season long, and especially right now at the pinnacle of the sport?
I appreciate it. Yeah, you can check us out at heatcheckcbb.com. We have in-depth previews on all four regions, most likely Cinderella candidates. The only six teams that can win the national championship. We went through, there are certain criteria. I did include one exception because UConn was an exception to our criteria last year. Exceptions do happen in the sport, particularly when it is as upset-filled as it has been the last couple of years. We have a number of other things on the website as well. Eli Becker, our founder, created what's called the Tournament Index, which is a model that has been one of, if not the most accurate models of predicting tournament success over the last 5 to 10 years. Make sure you check that out. Follow me on Twitter or X as well at BRauf33. It's BRAUF33. We'll have tons of fun in these coming weeks. It's best time of year.
Yes. Yes, it is. Brackets are getting filled out. Brian, enjoy it. I hope the transfer portal doesn't diminish your fun focus on the tournament. Again, just another reason it's stupid as all get out. But Brian, it's always a pleasure, man.
I appreciate it.
We have partnered with Charlie Hustle Clothing Company for this year's 10-12 Bracket Challenge. You can find the 10-12 Network Group available both the men's bracket and the women's bracket on ESPN. All you got to do is check out the links in our show notes, check out the links on our Twitter page, check out the links in our Instagram stories, or if you're on ESPN and you filled out a bracket, just search for 1012 Network, T-E-N, the number 12, the word network. You'll find the group for the men and the women. We want you to enter into both. We are thrilled to be partnering with Charlotte Hustle, sponsors here on the 1012 podcast and at the 1012 Network, our friends who make incredible vintage-inspired clothing company right out of Kansas City in the heart of Big 12 basketball country. They've got more than 30 schools to choose from, including every current Big 12 school. That includes Cincinnati and Colorado. Our brackets do have prizes for the top three entries, both men's and women's, $100 gift card to the winner, $50 gift card for second place, and a $25 gift card for third place to Charlie Hustle so you can equip yourself and be the best dressed fan this coming season and for March Madness and for everything else. So go to charliehustle.com. Don't forget our promo code 1012 15, 15% off all non-sale items. Go to ESPN, fill out your bracket, men's and women's, enter it into the 1012 Network Charlie Hustle group, and you will immediately be entered to win. If you have the best bracket, you're going to get a big prize. So don't forget to enter it in before the game start on Thursday. Oklahoma State, one of the two Big 12 schools currently with an opening. We have no idea what will happen in the coming weeks, but we know Oklahoma State is an open head coaching job. So joining us today to kind of talk about what could happen there in Stillwater, Marshall Scott, owner and operator of Pistols Firing. The independently owned college athletic blog. Marshall, welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun last time. I'm sure it'll be fun again, even though the topic is rather mind-numbing, I think, so far.
Okay, so let's start there. Because obviously, Oklahoma State, Chad Weiberg, made the decision to move on from Mike Boynton, who had been in Oklahoma State for 7 seasons. Very up and down tenure, high highs, low lows, including this season. I think some people, myself included, were a little bit shocked based off of the $7+ million that they owed him to fire him before April 1st. Even then, it was only going to drop to $6.5 million. How surprised were you when they went ahead and made the move to fire Mike Boynton? Did it when they did it before the buyout dropped? What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. Obviously, the on-court results haven't been there, so you're not surprised that, you know, a struggling head coach gets fired. But just kind of like you mentioned, with the money aspects of it coming before that deadline, where his thing drops, the Oklahoman like went through and like updated its story on his buyout, and it's like closer to $9 million, based on their reporting that they had to just pay Mike Boynton to fire him. So because of that, and then with you know, Boynton's already talked this season about, you know, the kind of the struggles that OSU's experiencing in the NIL landscape. So, you know, that's just kind of more money on top of that. Because of all of that, I was surprised to see Mike go. Obviously, great guy, outstanding representative for the university. But, you know, at the end of the day, the basketball results weren't there. So can't say I'm overly surprised that he was fired. But I did think that they'd give him another year just based solely on financial reasons.
I mean, given that the transfer portal is now open as of Monday, right? And you want to make moves quickly. One, why on earth are you setting buyout money numbers to drop on April 1st when no one is going to wait that long to fire a coach, given everything that's going on? If you've got somebody you want, unless they're going to go make a deep run in the tournament, you want to be able to make a move this week and next week, right? Like, in theory, we would expect to see, barring a head coach that they want, continuing to play past the first weekend, a name for Oklahoma State probably early next week. We want these things to move kind of quickly, right? Last time Oklahoma State lost their head coach was Brett Underwood, literally like less than 24 hours later, heading off to Illinois. So these things tend to move quickly. It's wild to me to think that you would have that set for April 1st. But you have to think that they were willing to go ahead and get the money, because obviously I don't think Oklahoma State alone is footing the bill for this move, to get the money to fire Mike Boynton or pay off what is out on the staff. And we're already seeing players enter the transfer portal, or reportedly, to be able to bring in a whole new roster. You have to feel good from an Oklahoma State standpoint that there must be somebody there with the money. The money must be there to go and get a head coach, replace a roster, fill out a coaching staff. There must be some investment here, both on Oklahoma State and from donors, to say, we're ready to do this. We're ready to spend. We're ready to be competitive again in the Big 12.
Yeah, you would certainly think that just based on the timing of it, them saying, hey, we're not going to wait until this drops, we're going now. You'd think that they had some idea of at least a pool of candidates that they were interested in going into it, just based on, kind of all the things that you mentioned. But yeah, as far as the timing of it goes, it's kind of tough to say right now. It seems like it's going to be a pretty quick turnaround, but I think they also want to make sure that they get this right. This is Chad Weiberg's first real, big hire among the two power sports of football and men's basketball. So I think that there's probably some pressure there for him to make sure that this is the right guy that they get. But yeah, as far as the monetarily aspects of it go, you wouldn't think that they would just say, okay, we're going to pay this, massive buyout and then just kind of figure it out from there. I think the buyout could probably be worked, down to not one lump sum payment, and especially if Mike gets another job, to kind of spread that out and things along that nature. So maybe it won't be as, I don't know if crippling is even the right word, but as massive of an undertaking, as it seems. But yeah, just with the buyout money, with the NIL, with all that, you'd think that they went into this, firing this coach, essentially, perhaps losing the entire roster. You'd think that they had some sort of plan going in. So, yeah, I think if you're an Oklahoma State fan right now, you just kind of have to trust Chad Weiberg, trust that he's going to make the right decision and kind of get the right guy in here.
Yeah, this will tell us a lot about Weiberg. He's had one coaching hire. He hired J.C. Hoyt to take over the women's basketball program a couple of seasons ago. I think that's the only hire, if I can do my timeline on my head correctly.
I think so. I think that's it.
So, first big one. It's a big one anytime you have to hire a men's basketball coach. Sorry. So, he's in the market for a new head coach. What to you are the things that I want to say, like, that these are the things that you're going to want to look for as the next guy up, right? These are the non we have to get these things have to check the box in their resume for us to say this is a legitimate candidate to be the next head coach at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I think the starter is just consistent winner, and that kind of seems obvious. That's what I imagine everybody's kind of looking for in their basketball coach. But just because of where Oklahoma State has been the last for a while, if Travis Ford was like somewhat consistently making tournaments, but they weren't all that, impressive. So I think what you're looking for first is a guy who can get his team, no matter the level, to the NCAA tournament. I think that's obviously huge, and you kind of have to have an understanding of. I don't think it has to be an OSU guy. That term gets thrown around a lot whenever, whatever coach is looking for a job, to fill a job at OSU, is that they have to be OSU guys, because it's a little different here. You've got to kind of understand the culture, and I think that can be true while also not. I don't think you necessarily need to be an OSU guy. You don't need to have come from the, Sutton tree of coaching or things like that. But you do have to understand that it is a little different here. Fans are passionate. But at the same time, you're maybe not going to have immense resources. I think if you build it correctly, I think this fan base wants to jump all into a basketball program. But that might not be the case right off the bat. You're going to, I think, kind of have to earn some trust. So somebody who's good with people, much like Mike Boynton was, but at the same time can consistently win. I think as far as on the court goes, you probably want a bit of a modern offense. I think 3-point percentages are going up, and that's something that teams need to be able to do in modern basketball. Thank you, Steph Curry. That's just kind of the ins and outs of it. I know that, there's a certain portion of the fan base that wants to win through defense, and that's certainly a big part of this aspect. But in modern basketball, 3-point shooting is so important. You need a guy that can drop sets and get, actions done to hit open shots. So I think that's kind of important on the on-court stuff. Building a consistent winner, and then you kind of need a guy who understands at least the expectations and the culture of Oklahoma State and Stillwater.
I think one other thing that's going to be important. We've done the assistant route with Boynton. I would be shocked if an assistant coach, a current assistant coach, was named the next head coach at Oklahoma State. I this feels like a spot where you need to go and hire a current head coach, be it mid-major, P5, D2, whatever. You need somebody who has head coaching experience and has postseason experience, and not just we made the NIT a couple of times, like has made it to the NCAA tournament, has been able to get there, because it's the Big 12. The Big 12 is the best conference in college basketball. It is a day in, day out, difficult place to play. So you want to know someone is coming in who knows how to run a program and has been able to do so successfully, which obviously is going to eliminate Doug Gottlieb. We don't need to talk about him in this particular conversation, so we'll just set him aside. And I think most assistants in the same case. So looking at current sitting head coaches, I think the name I've seen tied to Oklahoma State the most, or kind of, I don't want to say the leading candidate, but the hottest candidate from an Oklahoma State standpoint is current Drake head coach Darian DeVry. If I'm pronouncing that last name wrong, I've heard multiple ways of saying it. I apologize. Please, someone come and correct me. They don't do head coach pronouncers anywhere on websites that I can find. Currently has Drake in the NCAA championship or NCAA tournament. He's a guy who's had a lot of success, has been doing really well at Drake. You know, coming from Drake's had a nice place to play. It's Missouri Valley. Let's see, this year he's had at least 20 wins every season as the head coach at Drake. This is the third time in the last 4 years he will have made the NCAA tournament. What are your thoughts on DeVry, and who are the other names you think we need to be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I'm going to say DeVries, just so maybe we cover all of our bases, and maybe one of us nailed it, or maybe we both got it wrong. And so I'll say DeVries. I think it is a very solid candidate. Obviously, as you mentioned, he's been at Drake since 2018. Before that, was a assistant at Creighton under Altman and under McDermott. So he's, you know, a part of a pretty solid coaching tree. You know, the Drake Creighton area sort of understands the region. You know, you probably would prefer him be maybe a little more tied with Texas area, just because that's where Oklahoma State's going to recruit more so maybe than, you know, Iowa or Nebraska or things along that nature, but at least has a lay of the land for kind of Big 12 country. You know, wins the regular season in his first the Missouri Valley regular season's first year with Drake, made the NCAA tournament in 21, and then has won back-to-back conference tournaments, which have led to NCAA bids. So I think that, you know, he's an outstanding candidate. Kind of a he would likely, I'd assume, bring along his son Tucker DeVries, who is like the two-time Missouri Valley Player of the Year, averages like 20 a game, is like a 6'7" three-point shooter. So that's awesome. You know, with the portal being open, Oklahoma State's as of writing has, you know, 5 or 6 scholarships open because of the transfer portal. So being able to add a guy of that caliber would obviously be huge. That's not what you hire your next coach for. You're probably not going to just hire from, hey, we're going to get 1 year of Tucker DeVries out of this. That's probably not what they're after, but that would obviously be a big plus. Some other names that I particularly like, you know, Dan Sprinkle's been mentioned quite a bit. It's kind of gets the feeling that he's going to Washington. That's kind of the talk right now, is that he could be headed to Washington. I really like Pat Kelsey of Charleston. And I like him because he's won at two different places. He was at Winthrop for a number of years. Was able to make the tournament, I believe, back-to-back seasons there going out. So, yeah, makes the tournament in 2020, makes the tournament – well, qualified for the tournament in 2020 before it got canceled. You know, won the Big South Conference tournament. Then won it again in 2021 to make the tournament. Then flips over to Charleston. Has an all right year in 2022 and has since made back-to-back regular season champions, conference tournament champions, and NCAA title bids at Charleston. So I think that's what's most impressive to me about Kelsey, is that he didn't kind of just catch lightning in a bottle one spot. He built a solid team at Winthrop. He made NCAA tournaments there, and then goes to Charleston and almost immediately, you know, is able to replicate that success. So I think that's kind of my biggest shining thing about him. Another name that's gotten tossed out a ton, and we kind of talked about before this, is Will Wade. You know, say what you will about Will Wade and his time at Louisiana State, but the guy knows how to win basketball games. He's won 30 games in his first year at McNeese. He's qualified for tournaments pretty much everywhere he's been, at VCU, at LSU, now here at McNeese. So wins basketball games, but at the same time, I don't know that that's what Oklahoma State wants to jump right into. They're just now getting out of the sanctions that kind of spawned from that FBI thing. They're finally past the scholarship sanctions this year. This coming year will be the first time in a long time that they've been able to use 13 full scholarships. So do you want to finally put that behind you and then hire Will Wade, who is kind of a poster child of that whole event? Not that they had anything, you know, correlation between the two, but it just kind of might be a bit of a weird look if you finally get out of that and then go straight to hiring Will Wade.
I'm not going to argue with any Oklahoma State fan who's like, I don't care what he did. What he did was apparently report, you know, pay players, which is now technically legal. So, like, I get it. I think it would be Chad Weiberg throwing up the bird at the NCAA if they hired him, and I'm not against that either. He's proven he can win. I'm a fan of DeVries, however you want to pronounce it. I am a big fan of Pat Kelsey and what he's done. I think that would be a good hire. I like those three names. I think there is a wealth of a good potential candidates for Oklahoma State to make. I'll just say this. If you are hearing these names and you're like, well, I don't know anything about them, you can watch Drake in the tournament against Washington State on Thursday night at 9 o'clock if you want to see that. Let's see. Charleston plays. Let me find it. I know it's here. Charleston is 13 seed against Alabama. Number 4 seed Alabama. That's Friday at 6:35 if you want to keep an eye on Pat Kelsey. McNeese will be taking on, I know this one, it's Gonzaga, because I have them advancing past Gonzaga in my bracket. That one is Thursday at 6:25. So opportunities to see some of these potential Oklahoma State head coaches in the tournament this weekend. I'll wrap up on this, Marshall. If you were Chad Weiberg and you were making this decision with the information that you have, who's the guy you would have coaching Oklahoma State next year?
I really like Kelsey. But people sort of nationally, whenever they talk about this search, aren't talking Kelsey as much. So that, I don't know if I'm being affected by the outside world, even though I'm not even in charge of the decision, but that's kind of making me back off just a hair. But I like either DeVries or Kelsey. I think both of those guys, DeVries kind of, he hasn't been as head coach as long, has a 150-54 record to this point. So that's a little maybe worrying compared to Pat Kelsey, who's been a head coach longer and made it at two different schools. But at the same time, DeVries taking over and basically, you know, keeping it chugging along at Drake, I think has been rather impressive. Him potentially bringing his son to Stillwater would also help a ton. But I guess I'll stand on the rock of I like Pat Kelsey, because he's been able to replicate success at his two different head coaching stops. So that's who I'm saying, but I think it's probably more likely that it's Darren DeVries at this point.
Marshall, always great to have you on the show. We need to do this more often. Do me a favor. Obviously, people know or should know what Pistols Firing Blog is. They can go to pistolsfiringblog.com for some of the absolute best Oklahoma State sports coverage. Where else can they check out the work you do covering OSU?
Yes, on Twitter, I'm at Marshall Scott OK. Pistols Firing's at Pistols Guys. We're on Facebook at Pistols Firing. I don't get on Facebook very often, but search it. I'm sure you can find it. So pistolsfiringblog.com. That's where you can read all of our work. And then, yeah, find us on Twitter at Pistols Guys.
It's wild to think about just how long the West Virginia job has been open. Technically, it's not been open for very long. Josh Eilert was the interim coach, but it's felt for some time like we knew that this job would have to find a new head coach somewhere else after Eilert goes 9-23. He was relieved of his duties. And of course, this is all coming because Bob Huggins was fired last summer due to a drunk driving incident. He reportedly resigned. He says he did not resign. He's no longer the head coach. And despite the fact that he wants to be a head coach again, we can all just set that aside, because that is the ramblings of a man who is having to deal with a lot of things he doesn't want to deal with. But we are going to talk about this West Virginia job opening and the names being associated with it. So that is why I'm very excited to have back on the show again our good friend Ethan Bach of the Proto Report and West Virginia Sports Now. Ethan, welcome back, bud.
Thank you, Philip. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Let's start with, obviously, we've known this was coming for some time. I just, like, there's been plenty of time for Ren Baker to kind of get things ready to go. Like, this has been a job that no one has surprised that it's open. You can treat replacing Josh Eilert a little bit differently than you would have treated replacing Bob Huggins, right? Like, you can do your due diligence. You've got time to prep. What to you are, like, the boxes that Ren Baker needs to check, or a coaching candidate needs to check, for Ren Baker to say, this is our guy?
Yeah, so Ren Baker was very specific, like, about the actual game itself on Wednesday during his press conference. Talked a lot about defense, talked a lot about defensive side of the ball. He said Big 12 teams, the ones that are at the top of the league, especially in the last 5 years, they're great elite defensive teams. Kind of narrowed it down to basically said, you need the top 50 defense, like what this hire at West Virginia. So defense is a big part of what Ren Baker's looking for. And then I think it's just also, he talked a lot about how West Virginia's program's been the last couple years, especially the last couple years with Huggins. They rebuilt their rosters through the transfer portal the last two off seasons, especially. And Baker wants to see kind of that Neil Brown route with on the football side. Like, if it takes 3 to 4 years to build a program, that's fine, as long as you can start showing consistency and start winning after that. So he wants to see more of a program built than a coaching staff going into the transfer portal every spring, getting 10 guys, and then just putting together pretty much just a team, just to play for a year and then redo it again the next offseason. So that those are the two main points that Ren Baker brought up that were really interesting on Wednesday.
I mean, you can't ignore the portal. I understand nobody wants to have to build a roster through the portal every year. We're seeing how that affects teams. We look at Kansas State last year to this year. Like, that's just – but with the portal the way it is now, players able to just transfer as many times as they want, it's going to be a part of the game. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. NIL also something that is a big key factor, as far as it seems like coaches are caring more and more and more about what is the NIL, because it is going to be a big impact on how well they can recruit. And recruiting is the name of the game, especially in the Big 12 that is as competitive and deep and talented as it is. How do you feel like West Virginia is set up from an NIL standpoint when it goes to coach shopping and being able to say, we've got this ready to go to help you out?
Yeah, it's West Virginia's case is interesting based on what Bob Huggins' NIL resources were. I think overall West Virginia as like an athletic department has great NIL, have multiple collectives, one with the university, one not affiliated with the university. But with Bob Huggins, he had a lot of support, obviously, with donors and just people in the state, just being who he is. And West Virginia basketball is definitely going to take some of a hit, I think, in NIL. I don't think it's going to be as drastic as some people think here, but there's definitely going to be not as much resources from that Huggins group as there once were, especially last offseason. So it's going to be interesting because, like, women's basketball team has pretty good NIL for being a women's basketball team. So I'm curious how it actually transfers over to the men's without Huggins going forward.
All right. So we talked before we hit record, and, you know, so we talked about Oklahoma State, and there's a lot of different names that are, you know, out there. For West Virginia at this point, it feels like the list is pretty small as far as if it's not one or two names, then it's going to get really interesting. Who are the two names right now to you that are the guys that are most likely going to be the head coach at West Virginia by potentially this time next week?
Yeah, I think pretty much two names now at this point, Mark Byington from James Madison. They're definitely the popular Cinderella team in March Madness this year, especially with their 12-5 matchup in the first round. And then Darian DeReeves from Drake. He's shown consistency, and I think he's been massively underrated just throughout his tenure at Drake. I think this is the first time where he's actually at the top of Power 5 teams lists, and I think that's been a little just – I think that's taken a little too long because he hasn't had – a season at Drake during the 6 years where he's not won 20 games. And so this is another tournament appearance for him. They have a fun offense led by his son Tucker. So they're definitely going to be a team in a tournament that they could make a run as well. And that's another interesting point with West Virginia's search is if these guys go on a run, they have to wait it out.
Okay. So we had this debate earlier. Is it DeVries or DeVry? What is the actual, is it DeVries?
It's DeVries. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Now I have clarification. This is good to know. I mean, in theory, you know, he could bring his son with him, who still has some eligibility after this year, which is not a bad way to kickstart things in a new program. DeVries seems like, at this point, I would say, if he's not the head coach of the Big 12 school by this offseason, I might be a little bit surprised, at, if not West Virginia, then Oklahoma State. You mentioned defense, top 50. So let's at least look at those two. I mean, James, based off KenPom, just a defense, Drake's defense was 75th in the country. James Madison's was 79th in the country this year. Neither one top 50. I just want to note the one other candidate that's kind of been mentioned in relation to the West Virginia job, talking about a top 50 defense, if you want to talk about that. Adjusted defense, number 33 in the country would be Appalachian State, which is Dustin Kearns. Does he feel like it's a name that's still kind of potentially tied to this job if for some reason it doesn't end up with Byington, who feels like the leader in the clubhouse, or DeVry or DeVries?
Yeah, I think with Dustin Kearns, his stock kind of dropped after not winning the Sun Belt tournament, losing to JMU, losing Arkansas State in the semifinals. But just Kearns not getting to the tournament again. He made it once in the bubble tournament in Indy a couple years ago, but just doesn't have that consistency yet, I don't think. So I think his stock's dropped by not making the tournament. But he's definitely a name West Virginia could use as a backup plan if all goes wrong, which you never know. you never know what happens in the carousel. And but West Virginia's had 9 months at this point. Like, they've been able to kind of just do their homework, figure out who fits best for the program and who can pretty much end that Huggins era and just begin a new one.
How big is that? I mean, Huggins, obviously, as you mentioned, the impact it's going to have on NIL, him not being there. Like, the end of the Huggins era is such a, I don't think it's something we've maybe outside of fully wrapped our heads around of the, is this no longer the Bob Huggins era? And it doesn't feel like whoever's coming isn't tied to the Bob Huggins era. It's not a former assistant. He wasn't there. And so it is really something very, very new and different for West Virginia. I'm not sure I've quite wrapped, maybe it's going to have to be actually seeing a new head coach at WVU who's not tied to Bob Huggins before I do, but I haven't wrapped my head around that idea yet.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird feeling. Like, I mean, Bob Huggins has always had ties to the school, but since he took over as coach in 2007, I mean, that's at this point 17 years ago. And West Virginia's done a great job at having just long tenured coaches, especially since the 70s. Go from Gail Catlett. John Beilein was here for a little bit and before he went to Michigan, but then Bob Huggins had his long tenure as well. So it's not, West Virginia fans aren't usual, or they're just not used to having a coaching search every couple years. So especially for this new generation of West Virginia fans that are growing up and that are also young adults, it's new waters. All they know for West Virginia basketball is Bob Huggins.
All right, Ethan, I'll just ask you right now, if you're the AD at West Virginia, who's the new head coach of the West Virginia men's basketball program?
I would select Darian DeVries from Drake. I think he's shown the most consistency out of the names we're looking at. I think his defense isn't necessarily top 50. I mean, I don't think Ren Baker's going to actually get to the nitty gritty and just based off KenPom decide on the next coach. So it's top 80. I mean, his offense is good. I think West Virginia needs kind of a mix of a fun offense while playing defense rather than going the boring play defense route and win. But I think DeVries has shown the most consistency. Like I said earlier, he's been massively underrated nationally. And this is his opportunity in the tournament to kind of break that barrier and actually get national attention if he can win a couple games in the tournament. And I think Mark Byington's would be a fine pick. He's had tough jobs at Georgia Southern and JMU. Those schools don't go to the tournament rarely. So he's had tough jobs. Just one tournament appearance in a decade. I mean, his team's really good this year, 31 wins, a couple Power 5 wins as well. So Byington wouldn't be a bad pick, but I think in the end, if you're looking for consistency and just a safe pick. I think DeRees is your guy.
I'd just like to note that if Drake gets a couple of wins, Iowa State fans will be very disappointed because that would require a second-round knockout of the Cyclones. Ethan, always a good time having you on the show. Appreciate your time every time. Do me a favor, where can everybody check out the work you do covering West Virginia and men's basketball in general?
Yep, so you can find me at @EthanBach_ on Twitter. Got a lot with the coaching search at West Virginia. The transfer portal opened on Monday. I know West Virginia is going to be active in the transfer portal regardless whoever their coach is. And then you can also find my work at WVSportsNow.com.
Podcast Network.